Okay, so a lot of us have benefited from the so-called gig economy. Cars and food delivery and even housework, all on demand. For some Americans, these jobs are just a way to make some extra cash. But for others, gig economy jobs can be a main source of income. And that's where it gets tricky. You see, the big question is whether those workers should be considered employees with rights like minimum wage and overtime, or contract workers that are not covered by federal labor laws. On Monday, the Department of Labor released a letter giving us the most definitive answer yet. It told an unnamed gig economy company that it could call the people who work through its platform contract workers and not employees. Eric Morath is a labor economics and policy reporter for The Wall Street Journal. And I asked him first off for a reminder, what is a gig economy company?
In some people's minds, it's really just Uber and Lyft and these sort of ride-hailing apps. The broader definition would be including, you know, anyone that's using an app or a website to obtain work. And that certainly could extend to things like Handy and TaskRabbit. And some people even would include things like Airbnb or Etsy that allow kind of regular folks to sell or rent property, on the internet in a way they weren't really able to, 5 or 10 years ago.
Are the folks who don't, for example, folks who do not work for Uber Inc., the company, but people who are actually doing the driving, for example, or if we're talking about a food delivery app, people who are actually doing the food delivery, what are they considered so far? And how did this letter from the Department of Labor change that?
Yeah, so for the most part, they've been considered independent contractors. And what this letter from the Department of Labor did was cement that in a more formal way. This letter was, if you read it closely, is certainly aimed at places like Handy or Angie's List. One of these companies, and we don't know which one, asked the Department of Labor, if in the future a complaint was brought against us for a minimum wage or overtime violation, could we be found to be this person's employer if the person's a painter or a dog walker or something like that? And the Labor Department said no, and they publicly issued that letter, so it sets an example that other companies could follow.
What's the difference here? I mean, I think a lot of us can assume what the differences are, but how does the Labor Department define the difference between someone who's an employee of an organization or a company and someone who's a contract worker?
Well, the big difference is whether or not you're protected by the Fair Labor Standards Act. And the Fair Labor Standards Act includes minimum wage and overtime rules. So if, say, you're a painter and you get paid $50 to do a job and that job takes you 10 hours to complete, if you're an independent contractor, well, you agreed to do the work for that amount of money and however long it took you. If you've got it done in an hour, you made $50 an hour. If you got it done in 10 hours, you made $5. Whereas if you're an employee, then it would be, well, hey, the minimum wage is $7.25, so you must be paid that minimum. So the employer would have to make up that difference or be in violation of the law.
Now, of course, we don't know, I should say, the name of the company that the Labor Department is referencing here. But I'm just curious, can you give us a sense of the lay of the land prior to this letter for workers in the quote-unquote gig economy? What were some of the big issues that a lot of these workers said that they wanted? Did many of them want to be contract employees? Or do many of them want to actually be employees of these organizations that they're gigging for?
I think it's a wide variety, right? There's certainly a lot of evidence that many people who work in the gig economy don't do it as a full-time job. They are doing it as sort of weekend warriors or to supplement income during a slow period at their main job. And so those people may be very comfortable being independent contractors, but you know, there is a group and there's been lawsuits filed that where people are seeking more of the protections of a traditional employee, saying, this is my main job. I feel as if this app is my employer and I should, you know, have protections under federal labor laws and under state labor laws.
So now, is this guidance that's been distributed so far legally binding? And if so, what does that mean for these workers going forward?
So it's not legally binding. It's one of the weakest forms of regulation here. So it's the Labor Department saying, if we're approached with a case like this, this is how we'd handle it. It doesn't mean that a worker or a group of workers couldn't file a lawsuit and a judge could say, you know, I'm setting aside that guidance. Also, because of the way this is done, and the Trump administration did this earlier in their term, it can be ripped up by the next president. They could issue a new opinion, or they could just say, well, we're not going to follow that old opinion because it doesn't have the same weight as a regulation and certainly far from a law.
And do gig economy companies benefit from having their workers designated as contract workers versus employees? And I'm gonna imagine the answer here is yes, but you tell us.
Absolutely, they do. So if you had to follow minimum wage and overtime rules, well, what would that mean? It means you'd have to have a system to track hours and pay. And that is a big expense, right? I mean, there's not time clocks everywhere in the world for an Uber driver or a TaskRabbit laborer to check in on. So they'd have to develop technology tools. They'd have to have it audited. They'd have to employ a group of people to manage that. Whereas now, they're just sort of doing this matching and then can be hands-off on whether or not there were any labor law violations occurring.
What does this tell us about how the Department of Labor, at least under this current administration, is looking at the gig economy? I mean, does this portend a good future for folks working in this space who are doing these jobs as their main gig, if you will?
There's certainly been a clear shift in philosophy between the Obama administration and the Trump administration. So going back to the Obama administration, there was an effort to look very closely at people who were designated as independent contractors, not just gig workers in the narrow sense, but anyone who, you know, is getting a 1099 and that's how they're being paid, and saying, hey, is that correct? Are they being classified correctly? And they made it clear they're taking a careful look. The Trump administration has moved in the opposite direction. It's part of their broader sort of hands-off approach. They say they don't want to stand in the way of a business being created or an employment opportunity being created. And they sent, with this letter and other actions, the message that, you know, the government isn't going to be taking a real careful look to see if we can apply this law to, you know, multiple different employers.
Eric Morath is a labor economics and policy reporter for The Wall Street Journal. Eric, thanks so much.
Happy to join you.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.